Welcome, friends. We are continuing to explore God's story and our sexuality. And we're thinking specifically in this unit about how our sin and rebellion against God affects that story. In this video, I want to talk just a little bit about the vice of lust. What does that mean? For starters, what is a vice? This is language that, I don't know about you, but we don't use very much in our culture. But when we talk about a vice, we're talking about a disposition, a way of acting, a way of sort of a way of functioning in the world. And so this is not just a particular action, right? I do. So think about this maybe on a with a positive example. Rather than think about a vice, let's think positively for a second about the virtue of courage. I am confronted day in and day out with various acts that might require some level of courage. For example, if I see somebody being bullied, whether that's at school or at the grocery store, wherever that might be, if I see somebody being bullied, being mistreated by somebody, I have a choice. I can either stand up for them and courageously speak up or defend them in some way, or I can sort of cowardly way, sink to the back. Well, what happens in human behavior is that when I'm faced with these choices, if I make the right choice and live into this courageous act, that shapes my character. So that the next time I'm faced with a similar situation that calls for courage, it becomes a little bit easier for me to be courageous and to choose to do what's right and to act in that way. Well, similarly, when we think about a vice or the vice of lust, part of what this is getting at is that our actions become our habits. And our habits then, over time, become our character, become our disposition. So if you know somebody and you say, that's a courageous person, part of what you're saying is, that's a person who, when faced with these choices in life, you know which road they're going to take. Or at least you know which road they're much more likely to take because that's the way their character is shaped and formed. And so when we talk about lust as a vice, I do want to highlight that speaking about it as a vice means that we're saying this is not just a particular action. Like here's a person confronted with a situation where they can say either I see this person as an image bearer of God or I'm going to lust after this person. And they make the wrong choice. They begin to lust and desire that person, not just sexually, but to think about how they can use that person as a means to their own end. And so the vice of lust becomes this disposition, this sort of overall dimension of our character that affects how we live out our sexuality. Part of the vice of lust, Thomas Aquinas says that it's a sin of weakness, not malice. In other words, it's a sin that oftentimes people may to some degree find themselves falling into, not so much intentionally seeking out, but falling into and then repeating this pattern of lust rather than malice, where somebody goes out and intentionally sort of has this bad intentions from the start that really guides what they do. And so part of what this helps us remember is that when you're thinking about your own struggle with lust or you think about other people who struggle with lust, that the point here is not just to come down hard on people to show them how wrong they are, but to recognize the weakness there, maybe that they've given into and that they've fallen into, that then just becomes a pattern, becomes a way of life. Here I think about if you look at Jesus in the Gospels and people who are identified as sexual sinners, those are the kind of people that Jesus reaches out to. Those are the kind of people that he shows compassion to, overwhelmingly so, in his life and ministry. And so the point here is not identify lust so that you can just bring the hammer down on yourself or somebody else, but to recognize that this is a struggle. This is a sin of weakness that people fall into and oftentimes just becomes a pattern in their life. Part of what lust does is that, in the words of Rebecca Conan Dyke DeYoung, lust reduces sex to a party of one. that really what is wrong here is that, as we've seen in Genesis 1 and 2, this relationship, this sexual union, this one flesh marriage relationship, is supposed to be something that actually calls us out of ourself to love and to give ourselves to our spouse. It's something that involves the totality of who we are, the totality of our life. That there's no part that we kind of say, you know what, I'm really in this for myself and I'll include you to some degree. But it's meant to draw us into this relationship. And so part of what makes lust so damaging is it really says, this is all about me. I understand my sexuality, my body, my marriage, or my singleness to be all about myself. And this is dangerous, not just because it, you know, that it goes against God's intentions, but it's, we have to realize that this is damaging to us because God created us in His image to draw us out beyond ourselves, to show love, to really find fulfillment and peace and true joy when we do enter into the kind of self-giving that He calls us to. And so Augustine, again, to quote Augustine, says the disordered soul is its own punishment. And so what he means by that is this, you know, as long as I'm trying to seek fulfillment and find fulfillment for myself by reducing sex to a party of one, I'm always going to be restless. I'm always going to feel like I'm, to some degree, missing something. And maybe that's something that I'm aware of, and maybe it's something that maybe I'm less aware of. I'm not saying that, you know, the person who lives out of God's, who lives in a way in contrast with God's intention, is just always going to be, you know, in dismay. Because a lot of times, part of the deceitfulness of sin is that we feel very happy, we feel very maybe okay with what we're doing. But at the end of the day, what this is doing is it's closing us in on ourselves. C.S. Lewis speaks to this in one of his personal letters to a man named Keith Mason. He talks about lust in the context of masturbation and thinking about, trying to think theologically and morally about masturbation. This is what Lewis says. He says, for me, the real evil of masturbation would be that it takes an appetite, sexual appetite, which, in lawful use, leads the individual out of himself to complete and correct his own personality in that of another, and finally in children and even grandchildren. And it turns it back, sends the man back into the prison of himself, there to keep a harem of imaginary brides. And this harem, once admitted, works against his ever getting out and really uniting with a real woman. For the harem is always accessible, always subservient, calls for no sacrifices or adjustments, and can be endowed with erotic and psychological attractions which no woman can rival. Among those shadowy brides, he's always adored, always the perfect lover. No demand is made on his unselfishness, no mortification ever imposed on his vanity. In the end, they become merely the medium through which he increasingly adores himself. After all, almost the main work of life is to come out of ourselves, out of the little dark prison we are all born in. Masturbation is to be avoided, as all things are to be avoided, which retard this process. The danger is that of coming to love the prison. Well, I read that and I think, you know, the main work of life is to come out of ourselves, out of the little dark prison we are all born in. Part of what is so dangerous, as he's talking about, is that, again, we come to love our self-constructed prisons. We come to love sort of the vices that make ourselves the center of the world. And what is going on here is that we need to uncover God's real purpose for our singleness, our marriage, our sexuality, which is to draw us out of ourselves, which is to understand that sex doesn't just revolve around us or what we can get out of this, but it's meant to be integrated into this picture of marriage and of total self-giving to another person. And that's hard. That's difficult. That's challenging because it actually calls us to come and die to ourselves. And so in the next video, we're going to think a little bit more about what is the solution for this vice, how do we move forward and understand God's intentions for us that way. So until next time, blessings.